This is episode 315 of the 200 Churches podcast.
You can make a decision not to change, but then your church is going to continue to give you what it is that you've got. And so if you're content with that, then just don't do anything and your church will never be anything other than what it is today. But if you want the church to move forward, and we all do, it's worth the risk. It's worth learning how to implement change, even though maybe we've had a bad experience in the past. You just have to think, you know, what are my options? My options are to remain the same with no hope, or to attempt a change with some hope.
Welcome to the 200 Churches Podcast. We're passionate about providing ministry encouragement to pastors of small churches. We release a brand new episode every Wednesday to do just that for you, all of our small church pastor friends. Now here are two guys who are definitely better together. Friends, pastors, and podcast partners, Jeff and Johnny.
This is the 200 Churches Podcast. My name is Jeff Cady. I'm here in the studio with my good friend and podcast partner,
Johnny Craig.
Johnny, we have a third individual with us today, live in the studio, none other than the venerable Dave Jacobs from...
I'm here. Southern Oregon.
Southern Oregon.
Medford.
And online you're from...
I am from smallchurchpastor.com, and all I can say, it's freezing here in your state, and my wife tells me that, of course, I don't know when this is going to air, but right now it's like a beautiful 80 degrees in Southern Oregon.
Oh, my goodness. What are you doing here?
I know, I know. Well, I was speaking at a conference, and then I flew one state over to this place and spoke at Jeff's church a couple times. They have two services. And a great church. I just had such a great time there.
Dave, what do you think of Iowa? How do you like the Iowa food so far?
You know, I think like two out of the three restaurants I've had barbecue, and I really like barbecue. Went to a Mexican place and had some great salsa, and then we had a great lunch today. You know, and I had some like really dangerous hot wings that impressed even me, and I like hot.
Are
wings.
They still impressing you, Dave?
They're still impressing me and depressing me. But the listeners don't need to hear that. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, it's really good to be... Normally, Johnny, you and I aren't together. So
no.
Physically, we're not in the
nope.
same location
no.
when we're recording, even though nobody would know it thanks to our high-quality audio.
We've become
That's
real
right.
wizards of the audio game.
It's wonderful.
It is wonderful.
It's wonderful. And let alone having Dave in here as well with both of us. So
I've never seen Johnny
that's
before.
Really awesome.
I mean, you and I were at some conference once,
yep.
and so we saw each other. But Johnny has just been a picture on Facebook,
yes.
or the post office picture. But that's and
the
so
most wanted
the
poster.
Most
is
wanted
that what you're
poster.
Talking about here?
But yeah, it was so great to be able to spend some time with Johnny and lunch and
doing
some recording.
Dave, we were with Carl Vaders, the 50-foot tall. Pastor.
He is tall.
Yeah, we
he's
have
tall.
Been with Carl before.
Yeah.
He is the tallest.
I think he's 7 foot two.
Right? He
there was something like
he dunked
that.
On Shaq one time.
That's
I think.
Right.
That's what happened.
That's right.
He probably could
he
have.
Probably
he probably
he's
could
a tall
have.
Man.
He's a tall guy.
So we got Carl out of the way.
Yeah.
It's just the three of us now.
Yeah.
We don't have to share the stage with Carl at all for this
well,
episode.
Well, no, he's too big deal for us.
No
anyway,
one can
anymore.
Really share the stage
no.
you know, with Carl.
He thought.
Maybe our stage here at this church.
You got a big stage here. Maybe Carl could come
yeah.
here.
Carl spoke.
That's called a Carl Vader stage because it's so big.
Carl spoke at the first 2 years of the conference you just spoke at. He told me he actually thought the conference was named after him. He thought it was at a small church, but that he was the big deal.
Oh, my goodness.
Small church, big deal.
That
yeah.
sounds like Carl.
Yeah, no,
just,
I, it, yeah.
yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm glad we can be without Carl for
Poor
a change.
Carl. What a guy. We're just ripping on him.
For a change.
It's so true.
Speaking of change.
Yes.
Speaking of change, you came to my church, Dave, and you spoke on a Sunday morning on the topic of change.
I did.
And
How
then
come? What are they trying to push through?
Well, that's right. the thing. You had somebody.
I stirred some controversy. I caused a little bit of problem.
In the lobby who said, hey, what's coming down the pike? It's obvious. Somebody said to me, apart from, you know, you being around, somebody said to me, it's obvious something is coming down the pike.
That's right.
You know, what are we in for? What's the change we're in for?
Same thing happened to me. A stranger came up to me, and I'm just kind of doing the, hey, thanks for coming out and hearing me, and, you know, and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, he starts asking me all these probing questions about, why did I choose this topic? When did I arrive at the conclusion that this was the topic I was going
to
speak?
How did much Jeff, did I pay you to
how much
say
did
all
Jeff
that?
Pay me? Did, you know, did Jeff know, you know, all this stuff? And I just had to tell him, you know, I knew I was going to speak on this a while ago, that I really didn't talk to Jeff about it, and that, you know, the whole subject of change is something that I've been bringing to a few different, you know, churches and stuff. But yeah, it was funny. I kind of feel bad because you might have a little bit of things to mop up after, but that tends to be the case whenever I speak someplace.
That's what I like about you, Dave.
Really?
That's what I like.
I have a big mop, and I will have it out next Sunday morning. Johnny, you were just talking about change and your son.
Oh, okay.
Let's share that, because right now, because I have a grandson.
There's an analogy here. This is an analogy. Sermon illustration.
So my son's 2.5, and he can start potty training soon, but so he tells us, but he doesn't want to go potty training. So he wants to not get anything. He doesn't want to get his diaper changed, and he doesn't want to go in the potty. So he's walking around in a diaper. And I said, trying to change a church is like trying to change my 2.5-year-old's diaper. Because he's fighting me, and he's squirming against me, and he's not going to let me. He's grabbing at the stuff that's in his diaper and
he wants to hang on to it.
He'd rather sit in his own filth than change.
Yeah.
He'd rather just sit there and stink up the whole place.
And no matter how bad it stinks. It
doesn't matter.
And you're going to get messy on it, too.
Oh, 100%.
Eventually.
Yeah.
You know.
The whole house is going to get messy.
So trying to change a church.
It's like trying to change my 2.5-year-old.
A 2.5-year-old.
And let's, Johnny, this is classic me. I know you're going to say it, but you know what, too? Sometimes trying to get pastors to change is the same way.
It's just
right?
So true.
Difficult.
Right? Us pastors.
Other pastors,
yeah. All the other
us pastors, Johnny. We're the same way.
Yeah.
So lest we get too high and mighty about our church folk, but hey, us pastors are the same way. We get told by our district or our denominational execs that we've got to do something a certain way. Or if our people come to us and Pastor, I know you've been doing this for a long, but we really don't like this. Could we change this, or could we do something different?
Yeah.
Then we got to get all introspective and wounded and all that kind of stuff.
I said, no, I will not put a shirt on when I preach.
That's right.
I have standards.
Love me or I leave.
Thank you. Exactly.
You know, I mean, really.
Oh, man. So, Dave, you're going to talk about change, and we're going to chime in from time to time, but basically how to lead our church into change, or into the change process, or maybe even a little bit through the change process.
Right, right. It's amazing how seldom pastors teach on change. You know, we talk to one another, you know, we talk about all the terrible things we tried to implement and were met with resistance, you know, we read books about it and things. But, you know, there's not a lot of teaching on really the dynamics of change. And yet, in my coaching practice, it's probably one of the five top things that pastors of every denomination, every size church, eventually they want someone to help them process. They want me to help them process certain areas of change that they're trying to implement.
Mm.
And so that the, you know, we have to develop maybe a theology of change, or a practicality of implementing change, because it's a big part of what we do. You know, what are some areas of change that you guys can remember in your history? Maybe something that you didn't think was going to cause a stink, like changing your 2.5-year-old, but it did, or just something that you know, you tried to change and, man, it was really hard, and maybe it didn't even work. I don't know.
Well, Dave, you talked about in a recent episode, you talked about vision. And when I first got to the church that Johnny and I ended up being at together, long before he came, we worked on a vision. I even got this vision team together, and we worked on a vision, and we presented the vision to a large leadership group of about 25 guys.
Okay.
Maybe that was the problem, that they were 25 guys, right? And two guys put up some opposition, and I was such not a great leader at that time that I allowed the two guys who put up the opposition to throw me off course, and none of the other leaders around me were able to help me to get this thing back on course.
Okay.
And the ironic thing was our church ended up living out that vision statement without ever adopting it.
No kidding.
But we really ended up, truth be told, we ended up living it out.
But you didn't go into that meeting expecting those two guys standing up, any kind of opposition.
One guy shouldn't have been there.
Okay.
And I invited him. I said, yeah.
That's the worst.
Yeah, I think that he should be there. And so I was nice enough to invite him, but he ended up raising his hand and you know, giving his opinion, which was kind of counter. Actually, it was, hey, our denomination already has this covered. Here's the line. And he shared it, and that was kind of like, we don't really need to go outside of our denomination to
totally
create,
hijack the whole evening.
Oh, yeah. And then somebody else commented on the style in which the vision was being rolled out, the graphic work that was done on it, how unappealing and unattractive it would be for men. And therefore, the whole thing, and again, I was such a not that great of a leader. Maybe I should say it this way. I was such a bad leader that I wasn't able to get it through. But then later on, Johnny, you showed up. Yeah. And I had learned just a few things by then, and together, tell the story, we were able to change something that I think could have been even more significant than changing the vision in that church.
What was that, Jenny?
The church had a library in the middle of the lobby, is how I would describe it. So once upon a time, they had built a sanctuary, and then they built a sanctuary off of that, and so that became the lobby, but it was huge because it was the size of a sanctuary. And so they partitioned it by putting this big room right in the middle of it, and that room served as the library. It was huge, Dave.
Okay.
The library was enormous.
Okay.
The church had no youth room. Okay. Yeah. So they hire me to come in and do youth stuff, and I'm like, yo, we need a room. Like, to do this sit. Like,
right.
These kids have no place to call their own. And so I said, you know what we should do? We should turn the library into a youth room.
Wrong.
I know. You would think.
Big
but
time.
Somehow,
I told you at the time.
You did tell me
there
that.
There ain't no way.
Yeah.
There
then
ain't no
Jen
way.
Jen Vogel got involved because she liked the idea.
That's the last name you're going to name.
She had clout. Jen Vogel. Oh, that's the last name I'll name. So we got Jen Vogel involved. And then she and we got together with the major players. How's that? The major players, the people who were most invested in the library. And we had discussions about maybe relocating the library to a different space in the church. And it would mean winnowing some of the book collection down.
Oh, did we winnow, Johnny?
There was a lot of books that should have been winnowed many years before
Let's talk about the criteria of the books that passed our... Well, let's not talk about that.
Let's not talk about that. But we were actually able to make that change happen. We were actually able to get the library moved, which is a church library.
Oh, I know. That's kind of sacred ground.
It was
sacred
ground. Yeah. But truth be told, the lady who was overseeing that library at the time, she was very amenable to the process.
She was awesome.
Okay.
And very agreeable. And without her agreement and support,
wouldn't have been possible.
I don't think we could have done it.
Yeah.
So I went to her early and often, and we talked about it. And she had kids actually in the youth ministry at the time, and some still coming into the youth ministry. So maybe that had something to do with it. But we were told by elders in the church, in 6 months, you will regret this. You will regret that you ever did it. Do you remember that?
No.
Weren't you with me when we went
up? I'm sure. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah,
right?
Yeah. I know who you're talking about. Yes,
yeah.
We were told that.
In 6 months, you'll regret having done this. And we
there.
Still haven't 6 years later.
Yeah, I don't have any regrets about that. That's a cool youth room now. That's much better for the church than a library.
They built a loft in that youth
room. Huge high ceilings.
Nice. Started out as a library. And finally evolved into something more practical.
And useful for the church,
You know, in the old days, churches used libraries, but now they're almost never used.
Right.
We were involved in a small church for a while, and they needed to expand their Sunday school rooms for children, and they couldn't do it. And there was one small room that would be ideal for that, but what was it? It was a library.
Yeah.
And I remember asking the pastor, why don't you just turn that into, you know, and he goes, oh, you don't know what trouble I'd be in. I said, well, how many people use the library? He said, nobody. I'm not aware of anybody
that uses it.
Oh, boy.
He said, but it's been around forever.
Yep.
And, you know, but that's just an example of a lot of things that pastors, you know, face all the time in trying to implement change. Sometimes we're surprised because it seems like it's such a little silly insignificant change.
Right.
But then you all of a sudden discover, you know, man, this is obviously, you know, something that's important, you know, to people.
I tried to change the nursery check-in process.
Really?
At one point. And about got barbecued on it.
By the way, Johnny was wrong in that whole wrong.
Was he wrong?
Wrong. Wrong.
Wrong.
Wrong.
Let's say it one more time.
Wrong.
Anyway.
But yeah, Johnny, I'm surprised you'd bring that up.
Why?
I'm surprised you would. That's something we still have never quite settled between us.
What?
Johnny, obviously, he's hurt,
it's been settled. It's been settled.
Oh, man.
Do we want to really deal with this on the air here?
You know,
hasn't been settled.
Okay,
settled.
So for pastors to understand, the craziest, wackiest stuff that we get in a tiff over in churches,
right,
and that we have to like try to figure out. And if it was just Johnny and I, it would be one thing. But it involved regular people. You know, right. Church people are regular people. And it involved regular people who may or may not, to this day, I don't really care to know even,
right,
have been acting like in a sane way. But it doesn't really matter. But the craziest things, yeah, the nursery check-in process,
the nursery check-in
which
process.
You attempted to change,
yes,
and then I instructed that things be returned back to normal post-haste.
Yeah. He was instructed.
That's right.
To instruct.
No.
Oh,
no. I didn't have to. I might as well have been, but I didn't have to be because I just knew.
Oh, heavens.
I knew. But
we've run into some
crazy stuff.
Right now, you just know the people that are listening to us, they're going through their own list of things, the changes they tried to make that just blew up in their face. Never, you know, they could not float that boat. You know, they just couldn't do it. And, you know, so change is something that we all, you know, deal with. Somebody once said that your church is perfectly designed to get the results that it's currently getting. If you want something different, you're probably going to need to do something different. And I think most of us would say, yeah, that's true. You know, you get what you've got. And if you want something different, something's going to have to change. I was always impressed by Albert Einstein, who said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, but expecting different results. And there's just a lot of insane churches out there that they're just doing the same things. They're hoping for something to change or get different. Maybe they're hoping the church will begin to grow, but they're not doing anything different. And so that's just this wishful thinking, almost insanity, that if we just keep, you know, we haven't been growing for the last 3, 4, 10 years, but we're hoping just all of a sudden people are going to start coming through the door.
Well, we're going to just do it harder. We're going to do what we're doing and
more
of it.
Just do what we do, harder and more of it. And that's just a sign of, you know, insanity. So, well, why don't we talk about some ideas about how we can implement change? And, you know, and we'll just kind of kick that around, a little bit. So I know you know what we're talking about, how hard it is to bring about change in your church. And I want you to kind of identify something that's going on in your church. It needs to change. Maybe you and your leaders have identified something that you're going to try to implement the change of it. You know, what are some things that we can do that would help our change succeed? And let me make a few suggestions here. First of all, we always want to begin with prayer. I suggest you get together a team of prayers. And by that, I mean people that see the same things that you see. By that, we're talking about they might also see the need for the church to change in some areas. These prayers might be members of your leadership team, and maybe not. Maybe you just have a couple people that really know how to pray, and you feel that you could share with them honestly that we're entering into a time of trying to discern what changes have to happen in the church. Would you be praying for us that the Holy Spirit would lead us? Now, you want somebody, if you're going to ask them to pray about this, and if they're also not in your leadership team, you want to make sure that they can, you know, keep a secret and just, you know, pray about it. But we always want to start out with any strategy for change by just really covering it in prayer because, as we've already said, change is really difficult. So who do you have in your church that are good prayers? And could they partner with you throughout this process? That's the first point. The second point is you've probably got to re-educate your church in regards to the dynamics of change. And like I think we said earlier, I had a lot of fun at Jeff's church talking about a theology of change. And you might need to do that. Pastors don't teach on change. I would suggest that, you know, you first, you know, you don't start out by talking about all the different areas in the church that need to change. This might just scare your people away. But start with your key leaders, whether it be your elders. Have a couple meetings where you talk about change, not about the changes that you're hoping to bring about, but just the subject of change. Why is change so hard? What are the different times when a church needs to be open to change? How can we, as we try to move forward, implement change and, you know, and it not really cause trouble, cause a big stink, you know, in the church? So you start with educating your leaders.
So, Dave, let me refer then our listeners to your message at my church, Community Heights Alliance Church. There's a YouTube channel, and it would be for October the 14th.
Yep. Yeah.
October 14, 2018. And, Dave, that was a great message on change. And, yeah, you didn't talk about what was going to change.
Right.
You didn't give any substance to the change. It really was all about change itself.
Just kind of laying a foundation that would maybe make your people, you know, think about change, think of why they are resistant to change, think about how in order for a church to move forward, there's going to be times when things are going to need to change.
And you know what? The way you gave that message, I mean, you had it manuscripted and you had several different lists. Pastor, you could listen to that message. Listen to it on 1.5 speed because it'll take you a third of the time. Is that right? A third, I think. And listen, and then take notes. These are things you can share with your board.
Yeah,
these are things you can share with your leadership team, or even your the people who lead the various ministries in your church.
Right. So we go from putting together a team of prayers to re-educating the church. That probably is going to mean starting with re-educating your leaders, and then from there you go on to re-educate your people. You might want to put together a short 2 or 3 part series on Sunday morning on the dynamics of change. Maybe focus on the type of change that Jesus was trying to implement, the resistance that he was faced by the religious establishment to the changes he was trying to bring about. But the second point is clearly you just got to re-educate your people about change. The third thing is that you've just got to be patient. You know, selling change, if you're going to do it right, it's going to take time. And the leadership rule to always remember is never underestimate how much change freaks people out, you know, because it really does.
This is the hardest one, Dave.
How so?
Because I'm very impatient.
Okay.
I've been told, I want to say this in a way that doesn't sound self-aggrandizing. I've been told I'm the greatest. No, I've been told that I have the capacity to see the way things should be fairly clearly. And the problem with that is to me, it feels very present.
Okay.
Right? Like the way it should be is very present to me. And right. Like it feels like it shouldn't be that hard to get to that. Like it's right there. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And so the patience then to get there, it's like mind-boggling.
Right.
I mean, it really is. So when I got here, I've been here a year and a couple months, I really was like, I'm not doing anything for a year. Well, I mean, I'm doing stuff, right?
Right.
I'm like visiting people and
right.
having coffee and preaching sermons and stuff like that. But I'm not going to like try to make change in my first year. It was so hard, Dave.
Really?
I just talked about everything I would do with Suzanne.
Right.
Instead
right.
of like actually trying to do it.
Yeah.
But it's, man, this is hard. If you're impatient, this is going to be a really hard step for you to follow, to take the time to really make the change stick. That might have been a problem with nursery check-in, as I've tried to do it all like,
okay,
I just snapped my finger.
Right.
Well,
not fast.
You did see how you wanted it. And you talked to somebody, they cut stuff apart like right away.
Yep.
And the next day, I had
Daryl
them.
Daryl knew. He knows that you got to move fast.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
That's right. And he's just there to serve.
Bingo.
So he's just
That's
doing
right.
what
I
he's
like
told.
Daryl. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, Dave, when we're talking about change, the truth is you can't hurry it. And if you try to hurry it, you are going to break it. Change equals time.
Yes.
Time equals change. You can't change without enough time. And a good process, which is what you're talking about.
Well, there's kind of two different leaders. There are some leaders that they can immediately see where the church needs to go. And then others, can see where the church needs to go, but it takes them a while to see it and to be able to put it into words. And yet when they communicate, but the same thing is true whether you see the change quickly or slowly. What happens is we present it to our people, whether it has come to us quickly or slowly, but we want them to respond favorably quickly. And we realize that, you know, people, they just typically don't respond to change.
Right.
And so we don't want to get impatient. You know, sometimes we think that, you know, we're good at hiding our impatience. I say usually we're not.
Yeah.
And you can really sabotage any plan for change if you start giving the vibe off to your church or to your leaders that you're impatient or you don't understand their resistance to change.
Can I give a tip? Can I give
What's
a
that?
Tip here?
Yeah, yeah.
This is going to feel potentially frivolous, but this really helps me. Okay.
What?
So we are right now sitting in this conference room.
Okay.
Okay. I, in my inability to make the changes that I wanted to make, not inability, but my choice not to, okay? Not rock the boat too much.
Or inability. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're okay with inability.
I changed something I could change. This conference room.
Okay.
It didn't have that sofa. It didn't have that coffee maker. It didn't have that whiteboard. It didn't have that little table. I was able to change this space for myself. And not just myself. I mean, we have meetings in here and we use the whiteboard and things like that. But that really did help.
Yeah.
And I know how frivolous that sounds. That probably sounds really stupid.
Yeah.
But like, change something you can change, something little, something that the is not going to like hurt the church
good.
In any way. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
This doesn't hurt anybody that this conference room has been changed. And it costs like $100 total to get all this stuff. So it's not like a big deal. Do something like that and make a little change that you can control that's not going to have like negative impacts on other areas. And like maybe that will like satiate you a little bit in the meantime.
Well, I think it can, you know, it can give you change in people's pockets. If you make a few little tiny insignificant changes and it doesn't cause any problem,
right.
It was easy to pull off and, you know, people are okay with it. And then you kind of, you know, earn the right to make greater and greater areas of change.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
So we've got to be patient that selling change takes time. And it's better to do it slowly and it stick than to do it quickly and it ends up falling apart.
Yes.
You know, so I would say the next step after just trying to be patient is form a group of spiritually mature thinkers who will partner with you in trying to identify the areas in the church that need to turn and go in a different direction. I'm a big believer in having think time as a pastor. When have you set apart time to sit and think? I also think, you know, when do we have a time to get together the thinkers in the church to think about important things, direction of the church, areas that need to be changed? Your best thinkers could be on your leadership team. They could be on your church board. But they could also be someone else in the church that is a great thinker and may or may not be a leader. Jeff, when we were driving out here in the car, you told the story of one of your leaders that's just a great manager, a great thinker.
That's right, Dave. There's a guy in my church who is really good at running meetings. He also happens to be an elder. He also happens to know the policy manual front and back and the bylaws.
Okay.
So it was really nice the day that I said to him, hey, why don't you run our board meetings? Now, he'd been doing that for years before I came. And when I came, he just happened to have been off the board that year.
Yeah.
But when he came back in January, it took me about 2 months. And I realized, yeah, let's just try it. I said, his name also is Jeff. I said, Jeff, why don't you go ahead and do that for the March meeting? It is so much better now.
Really?
I can walk into a meeting, I can sit there and be a part of the meeting, and I don't have the burden of moving the thing forward, you know, pressing on the gas, pressing on the brakes, trying to get everybody included and all that. He takes care of all that.
Wow.
I'm just an active participant in the meeting. Again, I just walk into the meeting, my mind is clear. I'm not, you know, concerned about any of the administrative aspects of it.
It's not unusual. Sometimes, you know, pastors, this sounds terrible, but they're not really good thinkers. They're good visionaries, maybe. They're able to say, you know, we need to take that mountain. But when you start saying, okay, so how are we going to take the mountain? They might not come up, they might not have any great ideas. So sometimes pastors are good thinkers. Sometimes they're stronger as being visionary. But you need to, and that's okay if you're not a great thinker. You just need to be able to identify people in your church that are good thinkers. Get them in a room. You know, I say, you know, get them in a room, bring in two pizzas, lock the door, and tell them to come up with a lot of options in order to hit this target that we're aiming at. So that point is, form a team of spiritually mature thinkers. They may be in your leadership team, they may not, but put them in a room, buy them a pizza, tell them this is where we want to go, and, you know, help me develop a plan, or help me to, you know, maybe come up with a list of the things that we need to work on in the church. The next step would be to, you take that list. So let's say you do now, you have 3, 4, 5 things that you really think need to change in the church if you're going to continue to move forward, if you're going to reach new people. Then the next point is, you want to prayerfully prioritize that list. Let's talk about prioritizing. What are some different criteria or means by which one would prioritize a list? Imagine, again, you have 8 things on a list of changes that need to happen in the church.
My first thought was to ask this question. How do you prioritize the list? Do you say, what's the most pressing? Like, what's the thing that needs to be changed? Do we need a new roof? That's not really a change, but right? Yeah. Like, we've decided that this is the biggest change to happen to attract new people, young families. Remodel the nursery. That's what we want to do. We want to remodel the nursery. But that's a bit, that's a hard change. That's a huge change.
Right.
So it might be the most important, quote unquote, but maybe you should prioritize the list differently and put up at the top of the list the things that you can get done that can build momentum. Just
what I'm
saying?
That's really good. Yeah.
Easier to do, maybe less costly, but can build momentum to move you toward another goal.
And build a graduated acceptance of continued change because, well, we did this, it worked. We did this, it worked. Little tiny, you know, bits of change.
Right.
And people now are seeing some
build
things.
A track record.
Right, a track record that can be built on. What are some other ways we could prioritize that list?
Maybe we could call that the change snowball.
The change snowball effect.
You change the easiest things first, and you build to the bigger things.
Right.
That's one way of doing it.
Well, and Johnny, you brought up the thing about, you know, some things are important, but they're not urgent, and other things are urgent, but they're not as important.
Right.
You know, so if you have a roof that leaks, I mean, that is like an urgent.
Get that done, right?
That's an urgent.
But that's,
you know,
not
thing.
Change. You know,
that's
let's
not
differentiate.
Change, right? That was a bad
but,
example.
But that's a good point, though. Differentiate like work projects with
okay,
with
very
change.
Good.
It needs to
very
get done.
Good.
You know,
right.
Okay,
yeah.
Don't
so
lump
we,
that
you
in.
Know, we need new carpet. Well, new carpet amazingly is a change. It shouldn't be a change in churches.
This makes me
that's
think
a facility issue.
The basement in our church, the other campus, flooded.
Okay.
10,000 square feet wiped out. No more walls, no more carpet, no more nothing.
Got
blank
it.
Slate. Okay. So now the decision is made. What do you do? So in some, you could decide no change, put it back the way it was. Or change says reimagine the space as something new and different. Right.
Right.
And so I think that's kind of what we're talking about now. And so how do you prioritize, even then within that one project, how do you prioritize which thing you're going to do first?
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? 10,000 square feet, you don't have to finish it all in the same day, right?
Yeah.
So how do you pick what you do first and why?
So I think we go to our vision, Dave. We talked about vision some time ago.
Yes.
Where do we want to go as a church? And what change will move us in that direction the quickest? Because, you know, everything we do is leading us in a direction, right? Andy Stanley calls it the principle of the path.
Okay.
Right? We're on a path going somewhere, and everything we do is taking us in a direction. Probably we want to change the things that will take us in the direction of our vision.
Right, right. I was talking at the last conference I was at. It met in this guy's church, just a marvelous auditorium. I don't think I've ever seen anything as warm and creative as this place where we met. But he told the story of, in order for them to grow and have more of a contemporary feel in the auditorium, they needed to get rid of their pews and replace them with chairs.
Mm.
And he didn't think that was going to cause any kind of problem at all. But it really did, you know. And so that was kind of like a facilities thing, but it played into their vision of reaching new people and their vision of wanting to grow. And, you know, you can always put more people in a room with chairs than you can put in a room with pews. And, but, you know, he finally, you know, saw it through and he said, you know, now everybody thinks it's wonderful.
Sure.
But at the time, it was kind of a big deal. The idea here is get your best thinkers together in a room.
Yeah.
Buy them dinner. Tell them the areas that you want to change and have them, you know, kind of brainstorm on how to bring that about, or have them, you know, think together, you know, with you on the areas in the church that need some changes. And you come up with a list. You've got to come up with a list. Then you prioritize that list. It can be urgent, based on urgency, based on importance. Like what you said, Johnny, it could be the easiest things to pull off quickly and build some momentum.
Yeah.
But somehow you've got to prioritize that list. And the next thing that really, you said something earlier, Johnny, and I don't know if you're aware of it, but the idea was, you know, to try and identify the people that have a lot of influence in the church. And sit down one-on-one with them and share with them about some of the areas of change that are going to happen.
Yeah.
You get the influencers on board,
right.
Then that's going to make your job a lot easier. And remember that sometimes people with influence in your church are not necessarily on your board. And I don't know if you've ever seen this before, where there's just one individual, you know, that really has a lot of influence in the church. Talk with them. Share your vision for change with that person. Ask them to help you change in that area, sell the vision. And if you get the influencers on your side, that makes your job a lot easier.
And that's so practical. There's not anything really spiritual about that.
Right.
But there's something that's very Proverbs about that.
Right.
Yeah.
It's the wise way to approach it.
Right.
To find the people who will then really, in a sense, find other people for you and influence other people for you.
So just as your best thinkers might not be in your leadership team, your best influencers might not be on your leadership or your elder board as well.
Right.
So identify who your thinkers are. Identify who your people of influence are. Do some one-on-one time with them, sharing your heart, sharing your vision, and soliciting their help in the process of bringing about change.
So, Dave, this has been really good. So you form a team of prayers to get started, and then you begin the process of re-educating your church in regards to the dynamics of change.
Yes.
They can check out your message from October the 14th, 2018.
Yeah, your church website.
The church website, or actually YouTube channel, Community Heights Alliance Church.
Nice.
And then number three, be patient. Selling change always takes time.
Right.
Number four, form a team of spiritually mature thinkers who are going to partner with you and prayerfully identify the significant areas that will need to change.
Yep.
So you said buy them a pizza, put them in a room, tell them to think through some of the areas that most need to be changed
in
the church. In order to go into the direction of the vision that we have.
Right.
Prayerfully prioritize this list in the order of, Johnny, you talked about gaining momentum.
Yep.
So you start with the easy things first.
That's how I might
do it,
yeah.
And then you go to the more difficult things.
Or it can be prioritizing according, you know, to urgent versus important.
Yep.
It doesn't really matter.
Pick a way to prioritize.
Whatever way you prioritize, the trick is to prioritize.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last one, Dave, number six.
Well, just, you know, you take that list and you start at the top and you work your way down and you accomplish one thing at a time.
It sounds simple, but it's important to do that. I mean, it's important to just work the list. It almost seems silly. Okay, so number one is get a team of prayers. Well, that feels self-evident, but you have to do it, right? Like, you can't just think about doing it or say you want to do it. Like, that's a really important part of this process.
Well,
is
now,
that it's
now
a
remember
prayer.
This list has been the list that number four came up with.
I understand.
Oh, okay,
but I'm just saying it's bookended. Dave's tips, the six ideas that Dave gave us, I'm saying they're bookended by things that seem obvious enough that you might not put them on the list, but like they're very important,
right?
So that it should be prayed over beforehand. And then that you actually have to do it, right? Like, you've got the list, la-di-da, you actually have to do the list now.
Right.
And so I think it's just interesting that it begins and ends in a way that's obvious, but it's good that it's listed out for us and told to us, because we need to keep those steps in mind.
Right.
And now change is easy, right? If we do those things.
Good luck, you know. Even doing all the right things, change is going to be hard. But we've got to do that. We've got to create a culture in our church that is comfortable with change, expects change to happen, and we have ways that we manage and navigate change in our church.
So, Dave, what do you have to say to the small church pastor who has been burned a few times? You know, they tried to bring about a change. They got criticized, maybe even excoriated by one or two members. When you get really severely criticized by somebody in your church, that can take a toll on you, and you decide, well, I tried to change something once, and that's it. I'm done. If they don't want to change, I'm not. I can just do what I've been doing. If they're happy with that, no skin off my nose.
It's easy to give up.
Yeah, right. And you just kind of, you know, yeah, you give up and you settle. So speak just for a minute to the pastor who, you know, she's just discouraged and she just doesn't want to try any more change.
Well, I think we've all been there from time to time where we just think it's just not worth it, but it is. I would encourage that person to reevaluate what was the process they went through in trying to implement change. Did they sidestep some of the points that we have talked about today? Could they maybe go at change in a different way? People have said that you won't change until the pain of staying the same.
What is exceeds that? The pain of change.
Exceeds the pain of change.
Yeah.
And you can make a decision not to change, but then your church is going to continue to give you what it is that you've got. You know, and so if you're content with that, then just don't do anything and your church will never be anything other than what it is today. But if you want the church to move forward, and we all do, it's worth the risk. It's worth learning how to implement change, even though maybe we've had a bad experience in the past. You just have to think, you know, what are my options? My options are to remain the same with no hope or to attempt to change with some hope.
That's good. That's really good, Dave. And Jeff, you and I have talked a lot about how our current, you know, moment in history, change is happening at an exponential rate.
Yeah.
And if change is happening outside the church, it also needs to happen inside the church. So we can remain, and I hate the word relevant because it sounds like we're trying, but relevant in the sense that, like, we understand the change that's happening in culture and are responding appropriately in the church.
Right.
The church needs to be always in the moment with the culture so that we can be shaping culture and shaping the people who enter into culture. And if we're lagging way behind the cultural moment that we're falling into, then people aren't going to be growing and changing at your church. And right. I mean that, like, you're not going to be numerically growing, but even the people within your walls, they're not going to be growing spiritually. They're going to be stagnant.
So I have a question that you can ask, Pastor, with your church leaders. You can just ask the question, hey, what's next? What's next?
Right.
See what they say. Yeah. And then when you're done with that, what's next? What's next?
Right.
There always needs to be something next. And change has to be a constant companion of a church.
Right.
I mean, we always have to be changing. Otherwise, we're going to get left behind in terms of being, you know, if I don't want to say relevant, I just say relevant. That way I'm not saying relevant.
There you go, relevant.
Right?
It works.
We won't be relevant to our church anymore or to our community anymore. And the days of not having to change, long past.
That's over.
That's right.
We have no option. There's no option. There is no option if you want to be a serious, credible pastor of a serious, credible body of Christ, local church community. You have to always be asking the question, what's next?
And effective pastors become experts in the range of change, and effective churches develop a culture that expects change, is comfortable with change, and even welcomes change. These are the churches that keep moving forward. Even if it's slow, they move forward.
Well, I hope that the pastors, the men and women who are listening, are feeling encouraged by what Dave has shared. Maybe this has caused you to reflect, as it has caused me to reflect, on those times that you tried to change things and found that you were getting your head smashed in by a church member. So maybe it's caused you to think, oh, maybe if I had done some of these things a little differently, it wouldn't have happened that way. This is true. This is helpful for the next time, for the next change, for the next step that's happening. So, Dave, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Jeff, it's always a pleasure to be in the room with you, to sense your aura.
Yes, pleasure is all mine, gentlemen.
To lovely. Smell your very being.
That's exactly right. What a joy.
What a joy. Just take it in.
Just take it in.
Oh, my. I don't know. I can't respond. I'm responseless.
So with that, thank you, Dave. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
On the 200 Churches podcast.
My name is Angela, and I want to thank you for listening to this episode. If you haven't already, you should subscribe to our weekly email at 200 kindredchurches.com and to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You know it. We'll be back next week with another amazing and encouraging episode just for you. Until then, may God bless you as you lead and love His church.
Okay, you were starting to go to your papers about something.
How was that?
We could be
still
out
not
of...
good.
How was that?
Nope.
Nope.
What about now?
Nah,
nope.
That's not it either.
Now?
Nope.
No.
Well, I know that some of you right now are facing the challenges of trying to implement some change in your church. Maybe something specifically comes in mind to your mind. You know it needs to change. Maybe you've even identified it as something that you're going to begin to work on. But there's a little bit of fear, you know, there. And I think that's wisdom, you know. Never underestimate how much fear just freaks people out.
Change. And how much change freaks people out. Fear does too. But
fear, they both do.
Yes. Yeah.
And change causes fear that freaks people out.
Okay.
It's a fearful freaking out.
The future freaks me out.
I mean, change. We just start talking about change and we begin to self-destruct, even right here on the podcast.
I told Ellen I was speaking on change. She goes, are you talking about nickels and dimes?
Right.
I said, oh, funny. You know, but no.
You tell them you're going to nickel and dime us to death by giving us your 2 cents?
About oh, boy.
So you are good at editing. Is that
all
what you
perfect?
Said? Okay,
perfect.
Good.